T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Obviously not the game the Bulls wanted, nor this sellout crowd here at the United Center at 21,698. But is that what Annie says? Tomorrow, there's always tomorrow. Tomorrow's a day away.
You know, when your wife is Ann and my wife is Ann and you throw Ann out there. Yep. But yes.
And the final score, Brooklyn 138, Bulls 112.
Chuck? Nope. It's... see that version of Annie. I think he saw the non-equity bootleg version of Annie.
Did you see the version with Joe Ostrowski?
It's Herbert Hoover. Okay.
It's never not going to be funny, Todd and Dwight. It will never not be funny.
No, it's tomorrow, I love ya tomorrow. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was a thing last night. That was the Bulls with their little national coming out party and then their little national we'll be over here party. Vince Goodwill is on Twitter, at Vince Goodwill. He's an NBA writer for Yahoo Sports and a host at SiriusXM NBA. And as Mike Mulligan would say, a dear and valued friend. And he is with us now on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Hello, Vincent Goodwill. How are you?
Good morning, Chicago. How's everybody feeling?
Not great, but it's one outcome. What is your takeaway of the meaning of that game and how it all went down?
I mean, I think it was a perfect storm, I'm not going to pour salt into the wound of the Bulls fans, right? But you guys beat the Brooklyn Nets the first two meetings this year. They had to get a win out of you guys, especially when they had their big three intact. They were more motivated, and the Bulls won the second game of a back to back, and they were riding high because they had just beaten Detroit by like a million points. So I will say. And you're playing three games in four nights. Like, those things tend to happen. And that's not to say that if the Bulls had 5 days of rest and everything else was perfect, that the outcome would have been different. But I think that the Nets show that their elevator goes a little bit higher than virtually anybody else's in the NBA, including the Bulls. I think we can all agree that the Nets have been underachieving this year so far. And the Bulls, maybe by standard of wins, have played a little bit over their head. Maybe it just came back a little bit. And that's not to say that the Bulls don't have to fix some things, but the sky is not falling. Like, everybody just chill. You know what I mean? And if you wind up getting your teeth kicked in by the Nets in the second round of the playoffs or the Eastern Conference Finals, who's going to really be surprised?
That's it to me. And it's how you put it last night, too, when you were watching the game with us. This is not so much a referendum on the Bulls. It's just the Nets, when they are good, are that good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not. Here's my question. Did people not think the Nets were that good? Did people not think that Kevin Durant's not the baddest dude walking on the planet right now? Like, my question is, what were the expectations? Like, is it because we got a national TV game and you moved the time slot back so we could get in that second slot so everybody could see us? And then that's the performance we put up. Like, if you put that much weight on one game and it deflated you that much, then I think there's something wrong with your your short and long term outlook. Like, you're going to play Golden State in 2 days, tomorrow, in the same sort of situation where you're playing a team that has the best record in the league and you're going to be in a similar situation. Do you need to put that much weight on two games when your body of work has said, in close games, we excel? When we have a full complement of players, we excel. We have two players who can create shots outside of the shot clock, outside of the framework of the offense, that basically nobody else in the league this side of Brooklyn can match. Like, to me, those are the sober approaches that you have to take right now. In addition to just acknowledging that, hey, that team that played us is really good, and when they're at their best, nobody's beating them.
I like to take my cue also from the behavior of the teams themselves and the way the Nets bench, the way their whole team seemed to be reacting to what was going on. It looked like it mattered to them. It looked like they wanted to deliver a heat check. And when they felt themselves doing it, when they flexed a little bit, I don't know that they have to say it going in, and I'm not saying that Steve Nash is over there knocking over the whiteboard, but it was abundantly clear that it did matter in that regard to them.
Yeah, I think, and I was on the Zoom last night for the Kevin Durant postgame presser, and someone asked, I don't know if it was Nick Friedell, our good friend Nick, but it was somebody that said, hey, do you think that the league was paying attention? And Kevin Durant said, no, who cares about sending a message to the league? We don't care anything about that. He sounded, he almost sounded like the Chappelle skit with Rick James. He was like, why would I grind my feet in the 80s couch? Like, I don't have any common sense in doing that. And he's like, yeah, I grinded my feet in Eddie's couch. Like, that's what Kevin Durant sounded like on the back end. And he was like, we didn't care if the league is watching, but we know the league was watching. So clearly, they were far more motivated than the Bulls were in this situation. And if you're a Bulls fan and you are dejected, that means you didn't have that much confidence in your team this season to begin with. If one game is enough to knock your confidence off from your team, from the body of work that they put out for the first 41 games or so, that means you don't believe in it and you think it's fool's gold.
Okay, so we haven't talked to you just about the Bulls in general and your impression of them so far this season. And Vinny, you know I miss you, and you know I love talking about Bulls with you. So as to what you've seen, when you compare it to what you're seeing out of the rest of the league, and it sounds like you think the Nets are the class of the NBA right now, what is your impression of the Bulls so far, especially when it comes to how DeMar DeRozan has performed?
Okay, guys, I'm going to say this really, really slowly because everybody knows that I hate the Bulls. I hate everything that they do, right?
Go back to Detroit. No, I'm just
go back to Detroit, right? I'm going to say this very slowly. The Bulls have been the most refreshing, great story in the NBA this year, and I think it's sustainable. I appreciate it. I really like it. I think they are a second-round team at the least. I think they have the coaching, the shot making, the creativity, the defense, especially when you have Lonzo and Caruso pressuring you on the perimeter. Like, I think they have the ingredients to be able to be more than just a cute first round story. I think Cleveland is a cute first round story. But I think the Bulls, with this void that's been left by Philadelphia because they've had a bunch of nonsense, I think the Bulls are firmly a team that is going to make the second round. And to me, if you make the second round and your trajectory is going upwards, that means you're a move or two away. You're subtly away from being a real contender for a championship. Assuming all goes well, like DeRozan, of course, is not 25 years old, but he's playing a sustainable brand of basketball. And we're seeing Zach LaVine elevate himself to a superstar sort of status that not many people thought he could achieve and be able to do this in a winning situation, and he's shown it. And you have a capable coach in Billy Donovan. I think what you have is a very solid foundation, and I think I will be in Chicago this spring because you will be playing in a meaningful playoff series, and I think that is really good for the NBA.
So if you are Arturis Karnišovas, Mark Eversley, Billy Donovan, and you're really talking truth about your roster and playoff matchups, we know in this league that you construct a roster to prepare for playoff matchups. and to say, well, if they do this, we can do this, and if they do this, we can do this, whether it's who guards Embiid or whether you imagine the team that you think is going to vanquish you, how do you make that less likely? How do you answer some of those questions right now, and what do you do for this year as opposed to future years if you're playing out the way the conference is going to age?
Well, I think you have to be careful not to get too drunk off of what you see this year and to feel like, hey, we can get to the finals if we're a move away this year. I don't think they're that close. That's not to say that I don't think what they're building is sustainable, but I do think that Miami, because of their organizational experience and everything else, and Milwaukee because they're the champs, and Brooklyn because they are Brooklyn, have a greater chance of making the NBA Finals this year. And I'm not sure if there's a move out there that simultaneously will help you for now and won't mortgage your future that will elevate you to basically above them. I don't know if there's a move out there. I don't see that. But I do think, are there little things that you can do that can fortify yourself? Can you get another big? Can you get, you know, a rim protector that in the playoffs when the game gets far more physical and the refs follow the whistles even more than they are this season? Can you do that? Yeah, because in the playoffs, as we've seen last year, as we've seen every year, you know, an ankle tweak here, a bad call there, you can find yourself around later than you thought you would. So I think it's incumbent upon them, those hard truths are, to me, it's less about the scoring part because I feel like they have far enough scoring, and I feel like they have enough playmaking. I don't think they have elite playmakers as far as creating shots for other people, but I do think they have elite shot creators and shot makers. The one thing that I have as a concern would be who's going to protect the rim if there's a freeway there, if we can't keep up with you. Because as we saw last night, when Brooklyn started hitting shots, the Bulls started rushing things, and they couldn't make it ugly enough until their offense caught up. They had to try to match basket for basket, and that's what caught them in that malaise of turnovers and bad plays and everything else. Those things can snowball on you during the playoffs. If you get a rim protector or somebody with a little nasty, maybe that can help you through those lulls where maybe a 20-point lead is maybe a 10-point lead and you can still figure things out.
What do you think about Vucevic's fit right now with this Bulls team?
I still like it. I know that the team dynamic is totally different now than it was when he arrived in that trade for Wendell Carter. But I think ideally for someone like him, he is a third option. And I know people look at him and say, well, he was an all-star and everything else. Yeah, that's fine. But when you look at this being a perimeter-oriented league and you look at him and you say, okay, how does Zach LaVine fit perfectly on this roster? He fits perfectly as that, you know, 1A, 1B guy, along with a guy like DeRozan, and those two guys can alternate. There's only going to be so much for Vucevic. Now, granted, he's not a rim protector in that way. He's a body, but he's not necessarily going to be somebody that deters you from going to the rim. But you do need someone who can play free throw line and down. Even though DeRozan can get to the mid-range and everything else, you do need someone that can play in that second, that mid-tier level on the floor who can play 15 feet and in, and you don't have to give him the bulk of his touches. I'm sure he would like 25 a night, but that's just not the way that this team is going to be set up to be successful. And if he played next to someone who was a little more defensively inclined, I don't think that some of his, you know, shortcomings would be so much in focus.
Give us a full report as best you know it, including your editorial opinion on Jeremy Grant. That name keeps coming up. There are some intriguing aspects to this game. Is he's been at 27, he's been in the league forever, and is a bit of a late bloomer, and is believed to be perhaps available for the right price. What do you think of him?
I'm not sure that he is quite available. I think that's something that's been put out there. I think you can make the logical, you can draw, connect the dots, that he would be available because it's in the second year of a three-year contract and where the Pistons are as far as their rebuild, you would be better off getting something for him rather than him going into the third year. But I don't think that the Pistons are going to give him away. I think as a defender, he is best as a versatile guy. Someone you can plug and play, he can defend everything from 2 to 4 and maybe a little, and maybe small 5 in a pinch. Offensively, I think he's best as a third option, not a fourth option. If he wanted to be a fourth option, he would have stayed in Denver behind Jokic and Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., but he wanted to have a bigger role. And I don't think that after a year and a half, he's saying, you know what, I've had my fill of being the number one guy, and I'm willing to slide all the way down to being the fourth option. I think that's a little wishful thinking on the side of Bulls fans and saying and seeing the last name and saying, man, he's Horace Grant's nephew. It's in the blood and everything else. Nah, let's just be practical, folks. I think he is still someone at 27 years old that wants to find out where he fits in the league as an individual more than he is, hey, I'm just willing to go be a cog to a championship winning piece. And I'm not sure that he would be the right piece or the best piece, even if he were willing, for a team like the Bulls. I don't think he necessarily fits in that way because I don't think scoring is the Bulls' problem. I think you have more than enough scoring. I think you need a little more size and a little more nasty, and I'm not sure that's exactly Jeremy Grant. And I'm also not sure what you could offer Detroit over, you know, some of these other teams if he were to be put on the market in terms of, okay, we need size and athleticism, and they also need strong guard play. Are you guys willing to part with Kobe White at this point when he's starting to show a little more light and a little more, you know what I mean, a little more athleticism, the light has come on and everything else? Are you willing to part with that for a player? Not sure it's going to put you over the top?
Yeah, that's the question, is whether or not Kobe White ends up getting traded. And while you're here, as we're trying to figure all of this out leading up to the All-Star break, you mentioned the Sixers. That's the wild card to me in the East, is if they're going to actually come through or not. But the West is the question mark right now. How do you assess what you're seeing in the West?
Well, I think everything has flipped for years, for decades, almost you can say since Michael Jordan's retirement. And
yes,
maybe even before Michael Jordan's, you know, retirement. I think Michael Jordan was just the sun, basically, that everything revolved around. But the West might have still been the stronger conference even then. I think the pendulum has finally shifted to the East being the stronger conference. And luckily for the Bulls, they were not sitting on their hands waiting to take advantage of a bad East, which is why they are sitting at the top of a good Eastern conference, because they made the right moves and have been proactive. Out West, I think it's essentially two teams at the top in Golden State and Phoenix that have sort of championship DNA. Memphis is a team that is coming. They very much remind me, people, of a team that was so near and dear to my heart, a team that got under everybody's skin. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? A team that got under everybody's skin, that upset people, that played physical, that came from a tough town, and they had a really dynamic point guard.
I'm thinking of the Tom Thibodeau bench mob Bulls.
Yes, except they never won anything.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry.
Vinny's talking about Detroit.
Did I say something wrong? Did the bench mob Bulls ever win anything?
There it is. No, I just, you're right though. These fun, exciting, gritty, grindy teams are great until the other team has one or more future Hall of Famers to kick your ass.
Absolutely, but I think it adds to the texture of the league's story, and the fact that, and I've always said this, and it's one thing I've kind of lamented about the previous administration in Chicago. There's nothing more I hate than the punk-ass GMs who feel comfortable being a 50-win team in a second-round knockout. Go for it. And I look at Memphis as a team that's young enough that they can basically make a little noise this year and then be a big-time problem in the future. But if they choose to say, you know what, we'll go after Golden State now because Klay is on demand and not the full version of himself, and we don't trust Phoenix and Chris Paul in the playoffs, and we want to go for it now, I wouldn't be against that. So put it like this, guys. I think that the playoffs are going to shape up to be really entertaining past the first round, and it has nothing to do with LeBron James.
Always love talking NBA with you. And, man, lucky you. You got a hell of a league to cover this year. It is just never-ending stuff and drama and levels of Twitter folded into this that I think the league and everybody else is embracing with some of the interactions. So enjoy. We always appreciate you taking the time to spend a few with us.
I got a question for you guys.
Yes.
Like, I'm no longer a Detroit Lions fan. Like, I got off of that drug about 22, 23 years ago. But like, what's going on with the Bears? Like, I'm trying to figure out.
What's up with the Bears?
I'm trying to figure this out. Like, I follow you guys on Twitter. I see the misery of Bears fans every weekend, and I was watching, and I was like, they can't put up with this. Like, you know, what's going? Like, let me in on this, or is it just going to be Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay forever? Which I wouldn't.
Oh, they can put up with this because they have put up with this.
It's
so
we.
Hopefully the
we yeah. You got to own it. We put up with this. We have no choice. This is the
you're in a dysfunctional relationship. You refuse to leave the person that's doing you wrong.
This is the existence we have chosen.
Codependent, I call it, Vinny. But I think they might have at least put together a good candidate list interview. Now, will they hire the right person out of these candidates? That's a whole other issue.
Have we gotten the quarterback position completely right? Have we won enough games? Do we love rhetorical questions that we use to make fun of Ted Phillips? Yes.
Yes.
See, when I'm not a Lions fan, I can make fun of every team. Isn't that beautiful?
I think you're probably lying. There's no way you'd be that proudly offering the fact that you're no longer a Lions fan if you weren't sort of secretly kind of one.
Dan, July 27th, 1999, I quit. Barry Sanders quit. I quit.
Adding the specificity does make it sound more convincing. I just think there's a, like, when that parade happens, when they're hoisting Dan Campbell above everyone and they're marching down the streets, somewhere a part of you is going to want to be there.
If that's the case, I will be on a float next to Nia Long and Kelly Rowland, because that ain't happening.
All right? We got the Nia Long reference in.
There it is.
Oh, this is perfect. This is the perfect appearance.
Kid Rock are going to be next to each other swinging out a bottle of whiskey together.
That was the worst. That was the worst retirement.
Kid Rock, y'all.
No. I'm with you on Barry Sanders, man. The older I get, the more I just wish I could have watched all his games live.
Greatest running back of all time.
Ooh, that's a good Will. Thanks, man. We could spend all day. Appreciate it.
You're the best, Vinny.
That is Vinny Goodwill. Always fun talking sports with him because he's an absolute delight. And
I miss working with him.
There was a wonderful moment afternoon show yesterday. Parkins and Spiegel talked with John Lester about his retirement. And an all-time Chicago sports great was on these airwaves being very open and honest about him stepping away from the game that has defined him. And it was a good listen. And I think to hear what he had to say about the end of this chapter was fascinating. And we'll hear some of that next on The Score. Breaking news on The Score is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. We are going to get to John Lester, but we have a little NBA news courtesy, no surprise, of Adrian Wojnarowski, who reports that the Atlanta Hawks are trading forward Cam Reddish to the New York Knicks for a deal that includes a protected 2022 first-round pick via Charlotte. The Knicks also acquire Solomon Hill and a 2025 second-round pick via Brooklyn in trade. New York is including Kevin Knox in a trade to Atlanta. That's Adrian Wojnarowski reporting, and that changes your playoff matchups, as we were just talking about with Vinny.
If I'm Cam Reddish, I'm pretty happy about this, yes?
Yes.
Well, especially, right, like, especially financially.
What is the upside for the Hawks here?
Well, the flexibility money-wise, because they've already spent a lot of money. They're going to have to pay Trae Young a max, maybe even a super max this offseason. They paid John Collins last offseason. They've already paid Kevin Herter a little bit. They've got other guys on the roster. And Clint Capella is still there for now, making around $19-20 million, I believe. And I think he might have even gotten an extension, too. So it's also just a matter of kind of taking your middle of the roster guys and kicking that can down the road to, when everybody else is expensive, have a guy that's not making as much for them. So that's definitely part of it. And also, Reddish wanted to play more, because when guys were hurt and he was playing a ton while the Hawks had people hurting in the protocols, he was playing well, but then when everybody gets healthy, he's barely in the rotation anymore, playing 18, 20 minutes a game. So it makes sense because the Knicks need people that can score, and they're trying to win right now, and so are the Hawks, but the Hawks at least have the flexibility to take on draft picks.
And that kind of insight is what you can do when you want to talk basketball with Rick Camp at his appearance.
Now, you beat me to it, because I thought that was the perfect time to let people know that opportunity is, as we get more of these opportunities, and it's awesome. You want to go hang out with Rick Camp tomorrow night from 6 to 8 p.m., Fair Play Restaurant and Bar at 625 Joliet Road in Willowbrook. Rick Camp will be there representing Bud Light for a Bud Light Bulls watch party. Fair Play Restaurant and Bar. You can meet Rick. You can watch the Bulls take on Golden State. Enter for a chance to win tickets to a Bulls game. It's courtesy of Bud Light. Always a slam dunk. The fact that we are, as a station, starting to do this a little bit is, I think, indication of normality and some good times and convivial evenings to come.
I think it's awesome that we've spent the entire first hour and a half of this show talking about basketball and not the Bears.
Well, and we can keep going with something other than the Bears, because the Cubs were some of the talk yesterday. John Lester announced his retirement, and as he joined Spiegel and Parkins, or Parkins and Spiegel yesterday, he sounds like someone who understands the significance and the peace of going out on one's terms.
I've known for a while. You know, I think just now is kind of leading into spring training, and you know, don't want to take anything away from that. And hopefully we have spring training on time and, you know, all that stuff. But like I said, I've known for a while and just kind of wanted to get into the off season and sit down and make sure that it was right. And it is. And you know, wanted to get through the holidays as well. So I guess there's no real great time, but this is as good a time as any.
Was watching your starts with interest in St. Louis, John Lester. You had figured some stuff out. You and Adam Wainwright, you were pitching well, man. It's caught me by surprise today. You know there's more miles left in that arm, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I could do it, but, you know, like I said, just this year was tough, you know, physically and mentally for me, just the grind and you know, I told Jesse Rogers in the interview that I did last, whenever I did it, you know, John Lackey told me a few years ago, he's like, when the work outweighs the pleasure of pitching, you know, it's time to kind of evaluate the situation you're at. And that's where I was at. The work in between the starts was just getting too hard to keep up with just the little nicks and bumps that were, you know, bothering me through the years. And like I said, just this year, I knew physically I wasn't able to do the things, not only on the field, but just recovery-wise that I was used to do.
Can you take us back to that time, that moment where you made the decision to buy in and it honestly changed the fortune of the team that I've loved since I was a little kid forever? Like, what was the tipping point that made you choose the Cubs?
I mean, I think there's a lot of things involved in that, you know, maybe one day, you know, we'll be able to fully share, but you know, I think the biggest thing for me is just the comfort. You know, I talk about that going back to the Red Sox, but you know, I don't think if Theo and Jed and all those guys are with the Cubs, I necessarily sign with them. I probably end up back with the Red Sox. You know, some other factors involved with different coasts and, you know, other things, but just the belief they gave me was just incredible. The amount of confidence they had in their young guys that were going to come up. And you know, we've all seen it how many times where a young guy's, you know, this big high prospect that, you know, can't make it a month in the big leagues and falls on his face. And that happens a lot. But I don't think that happened with any of their guys that they had, you know. So that's pretty incredible in itself. So I think, like I said, the biggest thing, number one, is comfort. The other, number two, is just their confidence in what they were trying to do there.
John, I know this is, at this point, the definition of out of your hands. We stopped counting the numbers now on the day that you're officially retired, but what would the Hall of Fame mean to you?
I mean, you know what? I mean, I think obviously it would mean an unbelievable amount to me. You know, I didn't play the game for that reason. You know, I think that's another reason why, you know, I know it's time. I've never played the game for numbers. I've only played the game to win and contribute. And, you know, I feel like if I was just continued playing, I would only be playing for myself and padding those stats, and I don't want to do that. But, you know, if that day comes and they call my name and I get to be enshrined with a lot of unbelievable players, I mean, that would be a moment that I wouldn't be able to describe.
The numbers are virtually identical in both places. Would it be a Cubs hat or a Red Sox hat?
Hey, you know what's great about that whole deal is they get to pick for you now, so I don't have to pick if that happened. You know, somebody asked me that. It was today. It was earlier today. And, you know, that's a hard decision for me personally, just because, you know, both places meant so much to me at different points in my career. The people that I've met along the way in both organizations, kind of, you know, same thing. So that's why I say that. I'm not trying to be politically correct in that whole deal, but both organizations meant so much to me and both cities meant so much to me that, you know, if it was to happen, you know, I was kind of hoping they could do one of those fan hats where you can pick both teams.
Don't do that. Just let them pick a hat. You don't want to look like an idiot. Like that Bears fan with the multi, like Butkus, Sayers, Ditka, all of it all over his jersey.
Come on, though. When you've broken two curses or helped be on one team that broke a curse, even though that was after the fact by a couple of years, and then you help break this curse, I think he's allowed.
What do you think he does? You think it's a guy who just kind of disappears and goes on about his life, or do you think this is a coach, broadcaster, someone who stays in the game?
I don't know, because he's at peace seemingly with whatever he ends up doing. He's, like I said, when it comes to somebody I interviewed when I was in the clubhouse and I wasn't there every day, he was just so helpful. When it came to just telling you what you wanted to learn or know, it was really appreciated by me. And then also would give people the benefit of the doubt, which I truly appreciated. Just seemed like a good teammate, whether it was in a conversation or obviously what he did for his respective baseball teams. I do think what he did with St. Louis was incredibly notable. I thought that was probably one of the most impressive things because of the age and what St. Louis was trying to do. And then to put them in the wild card conversation, I respect that. But when it comes to Lester, I think before we get into what he does in the future, to me, there are very few pitchers of that ilk who, when you know you need playoff stones, that's your dude. It's like him and a very select few in baseball. Like Scherzer, I would put in there currently. Verlander, if he's healthy. But like, there's very few.
I also think the comps that we use don't necessarily do him justice because of the era in which he played. And you really have to examine the way he bridged the change in the game. And I know that we'll have time to expand this conversation as we get into the making our own hot stove or heating it up ourselves throughout the winter. But Matt Spiegel tweeted this yesterday. The guy's over 2,500 strikeouts. I mean, the guy's got more than Juan Marichal and Jim Palmer and Lefty Grove, I think, and some others. And he went from being a power pitcher to being more of a tactician. When we start talking about guys like Frank Tanana, or, you know, guys who had to do so because of injury, there's all sorts of examples of that. But he had a very impressive career on its own merits for reasons that don't necessarily have to be held up side by side with others. So vaya con Dios to him in whatever he wants to do.
Congratulations to John Lester on a absolutely fabulous career. And I thought it was just, again, very true to form that he appeared in several interviews with Chicago people on the day he retired. I'm just a fan of his work. That really is what it comes down to.
She's Leila Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein. We're Bernstein and Rahimi. The Midday Midway is next. And I know that you probably know this because you have placed your Girl Scout cookie order. I have not.
Orders.
I did not know. New flavors. There are brand new cookies that we need to discuss.
Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. with glitter. That's it.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi.
Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Here at the midway point of this Thursday show, we began by talking about our late night with the Bulls. It started out so great. I think it was 71-71 before all hell broke loose, and we had to try to reconcile.
And boy, did it.
Try to reconcile our basketball existence, but that's okay because we've had help. We had help from hearing what Billy Donovan had to say. We had help from the wisdom and entertainment of Vincent Goodwill. And then we heard from John Lester, and eventually, once the Bulls get through this stretch, we'll know more about them, and everything will end up being fine, I hope.
What? No, I mean, we don't know that it's going to be fine, necessarily. They're just not the Nets. I'm good with
positive.
It.
I'm allowed every once in a while. I can try.
No, the Bulls are making me happy. They're just not the Nets.
Correct.
Well, this story had me at Glitter Attack. So... two Florida women, shocker, attack a man with glitter and face felony charges.
What?
Because they broke into his apartment, not so much the glitter being a weapon, let's be honest.
Okay.
And their mugshots, they do not care. They are proud of themselves and their mugshots. They both have snarky smiles like, yeah, I did it. What's up? And I love it. Caitlin O'Donovan and Sarah Franks arrived at the man's Clearwater apartment shortly before 3 a.m. Monday, according to an arrest affidavit. Nothing good happens after 2 a.m. involving glitter. Nothing.
These mugshots are spectacular.
Aren't they?
Okay. We're the glitter twins.
The pride. The snark. The defiance. I love all of this. So the pair began arguing with the man on Fairwood Avenue as he was standing on his fenced-in balcony. So here they are yelling at each other from the street. The argument escalated and both women started throwing containers of glitter at the man, striking him in the upper torso and head. Also surprisingly, at 3 a.m., the nature of the argument was unknown. It will never be known.
But did they happen to have the glitter just in case? Like, did they keep weaponized glitter, or did they decide that glitter they happen to have on hand could be weaponized?
I don't know. I need more answers. The argument escalated, and both women started throwing containers of glitter. Like we said, Franks, then the woman, climbed over the balcony fence and started hitting him with more containers of glitter. How did you have all this glitter, Miss Franks?
I mean.
After 2 a.m., awfully convenient. Franks then unlocked the man's front door so O'Donovan, the other woman who is proud of herself and her mugshot, could enter the apartment. More glitter was thrown at the man, and Franks fled the apartment in her car. Authorities eventually traced Franks' vehicle back to her Seville Boulevard home. Police said glitter was observed inside the vehicle, and the car was, quote, still warm to the touch. Really hard detective work here. The arrest affidavit also said that Franks broke a window as she was leaving the apartment, leading to an extra misdemeanor charge of criminal mischief. Glitter attack. That is going to be such a pain to clean up. Have you ever tried to vacuum glitter out of carpet?
Hey, I got a daughter through preschool, grade school. Believe me, there has been all kinds of glitter incidents in usually the downstairs playroom. And we'll sell this house and the next owners will find glitter.
I imagine Dan just looking at Zoe when she's little and being like, how does this glitter get us closer to winning a championship?
By the way, if you need to acquaint yourselves with another glitter bomb, they are called cascarones. They are glitter-filled Easter eggs and a South Texas tradition, and they are awesome. Also, very difficult to clean up.
Cascarones. Okay.
Yeah. They sell them at the HEB. Not that that helps me here, but they're pretty great.
You've already placed your order for Girl Scout cookies.
Orders.
And I am a traditionalist. When it comes to such things, that I generally will default to the ones that with which I grew up, and that would be Thin Mints or the Do-Si-Dos, the peanut butter sandwich that are kind of like Nutter Butters, or the Tagalongs. And for a while, I liked, and every bakery's different, and the ones regionally can be different. The Dulce de Leches I enjoyed as well. But how about this? The two flavors that stand out to me on the Girl Scouts website. Did you see caramel chocolate chip cookies. They say these are the gluten-free ones, which would probably, you know, cross them off my list just there. But they're chewy with caramel, semi-sweet chocolate chips, and sea salt. The other one is called Adventureful.
Those are the ones that Rick Camp and I have had a specific discussion about. The other ones I did not know about.
This is new to me. Adventureful brownie-inspired cookies with caramel-flavored creme with a hint of sea salt.
No bad words there.
I am intrigued by the Adventureful. I don't know if that would count as a brookie. We've seen these combination brownie cookies that have been sold, but I am intrigued.
I am ordering.
Yeah, didn't you get intrigued, Rick? Didn't you order the Adventurefuls? I did not. I did order, like, they had gluten-free ones that Jay's daughter was selling, but they were toffee cookies. They were not the caramel ones that you speak of.
Yeah, I haven't placed my order as of yet because, one, I'm unorganized, and two, I've had to really contemplate how much I'm allocating for cookies.
I spent a lot of money, but I'm not ashamed of myself.
There's also a cookie called a Lemon Up. It's described as a crispy lemon cookie baked with inspiring messages. The one on their website is a cookie that says, "I am a leader." And I just wonder if, like, there's like
Mark
a Tom
Stressman had those.
Right, like Toolbox of Concepts, or if there's a Tom Thibodeau version of them where they
finding
just say,
the wise
ice, you know, just inspiring messages.
Hold
guard
on.
Somebody.
What fresh hell would Tom Thibodeau be with a Girl Scout trying to get them to sell cookies? There is some sort of really great sitcom that could happen here. But the only person who would be upset would be Tibbs.
Tom Thibodeau, Girl Scout troop leader. I'm down.
Was that part of that movie
with Vin Diesel? Didn't he have to be like a Girl Scout troop person for a while?
But Vin Diesel is likable.
Oh, he was like a babysitter. He was like undercover.
The Pacifier.
Yeah, The Pacifier. I love that movie.
Really?
You do?
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining. What, you didn't like it? What's wrong with it?
Things you didn't expect to hear on a Thursday. The Pacifier, I loved that movie.
I just want to know. Like, I haven't watched it. I love Grandma's Boy.
So, I mean,
if we're here talking about random movies, there
you go.
So,
Mike, in theory, I'll just say, for sake of argument, because it was in the room last week, let's just say we were using pies as a way to say how much you like movies.
Fine. Neutral example.
Yeah, neutral
just in
example.
Case.
Right. Just hold it out of the air. If it was a scale of 1 to 5, how many slices of pie would you give The Pacifier?
I'd go 6. 6 slices of pie.
Whoa.
It's a
lot.
I don't know. Maybe 10.
I don't know. Hello.
That's the Midday Midway, and it means Anthony Herron is going to join us next. The NFL is all a flux. Got to be careful there. There are games this weekend, and then there are the games that the loser teams play, and those are the games of interviews and reconstruction of front offices to try to actually participate in the playoff games.
The loser teams.
Well, what are they, right? I mean, come on. Let's call them what they are. He will mince no words. He will join us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.